Golf Talk America is brought to you in part by Club Corp, the world leader in private clubs. Go to clubcorp.com for more information.
The PGA Tour presents the fusion of golf, music, sports, and entertainment. Golf Talk America, streaming live on pgatour.com. Follow us today and every day on Twitter at Golf Talk America. Now, the Golf Talk America crew.
And hello once again, everybody. Welcome to Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews with you. It is Friday, the 5th of October, which also happens to be my sister's birthday. Happy birthday, Kelly.
Happy birthday.
But it's also day two for the next stop on the PGA Tour, Safeway Open at Silverado Resort in Napa. And Phil Mickelson apparently chose the wrong week to get hot. So he decided he had to get back to the United States and to a beautiful Napa to finally start playing well, and we'll talk about that a little bit. But he is high up on the leaderboard. The guys are out and finished yesterday, and he was right there at number three spot, just a couple of shots behind a couple of guys you probably have never heard of.
He was here
but he's playing well. So we'll talk a little bit about the Safeway Open. And our guest today, we're going to have Steve Johnson with Hank Haney Golf on. Dr. Bob Winters also will be with us a little bit later on to talk about all kinds of stuff. But, you know, it's hard not to talk Ryder Cup and the lingering effects of Ryder Cup and what's going on. So that's going to certainly leak into it. As always, Frank Bassett in the Nashville studios warming up for today's show. How are you doing today, Frank?
And in this corner, weighing in at 247. Jeez, I'm fine, man. How are you? It just lingers on and on and on. It's like a Supreme Court confirmation hearing. Jeez.
It is, isn't it?
We've got to get over this cup thing.
Two things that just won't go away. Koepka, by the way, said it's laughable that he and DJ got in any kind of a fight.
Who would you pick?
On the plane going over. Yeah, he said that same thing. He goes, it'd be interesting to see who would win.
I think Koepka would just beat the hell out of him. Well, yeah, DJ's got that long reach. He's got that long reach over Koepka.
Yeah, but I just don't know that he's nearly as strong. Koepka's a strong guy.
Oh,
I mean, I'd put Koepka up against almost anybody on the tour,
well,
I think.
Strong's one thing, but smell's not everything, right? Here we go. Put him
on. Yeah, there you go.
Okay, let's get on with it. Come on.
Well, we can hear him working in the background. He is a managing partner of Hank Haney Golf, and apparently he's scraping the dirt off the bottom of his tractor or something. Steve Johnson joins us. Steve, you multitasking here while you're doing this with us?
I am. I am multitasking. And, you know, they used to talk old school PGA pros where they said we're supposed to do seven things. You know, we're supposed to promote the game. We're supposed to teach the game. We're supposed to play the game. Those other four things are not pretty, though. Picking the range is one of them, and I was out doing that this morning. So.
Did you have on the range picker suit, Steve? Remember that picture of the guy in the old basket cage that he wore over his body?
No, I didn't have that. I was I was going raw out there. I had no protection.
Ooh.
And I'm a hand picker is my specialty, hand picking.
Ooh.
All right. Well,
look at you.
You'd be hitting Nashville.
You are skilled.
I'm not one of those guys.
Go ahead, Tim. Steve, I might come out there and hit some balls on your little nine-hole thing. Can I do that?
Absolutely. No. It's looking good, too. Looking really good.
$65.
Is it? Good. I might come out there. That'd be a good place to
come
do
on.
It. All right, let's get into it here, Steve. We haven't talked to you since Ryder Cup, and I know you were screaming at your TV like a lot of us were. Give me your feedback on what you think happened there. What was the downturn for the United States? Was it bad captain picks? Was it the players themselves just couldn't play? Was it Patrick Reed dissension in the clubhouse? What do you think it was?
Well, it could be all of the above. I mean, it started out, it looked like it was going to be a rout by the U.S. You guys have talked about it a bunch. Everyone's talking about it. 3-1 in the morning session. I talked to Hank after that morning session on Friday, and he said, you know what? We could not have played worse.
I heard that on your show.
But man, was he wrong. We could play worse.
Well, they did. They won 3-1, but they did not look good. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, so, you know what, guys? Everybody talks about the Europeans wanting it more and all that. You know what? They just played better than we did.
Yeah, they did.
They played better than we did. Fans,
but is that the reason every time we say the same thing, don't we?
Well, I mean, you look at the scores, Tim, and the scores are very generous. You look at you go to the RyderCup.com and you look at the scores that everyone has posted. Now, some of those scores are generous because when they lose the hole, they pick up. And when they lose the hole, they get that putt, that 10-foot putt that they could have missed is counted as made.
Right.
We didn't play very well. Tony Finau was really one of our only bright spots.
He was solid as a rock, and he was very questionable at the start of the Ryder Cup, being that he was a rookie. And I was just thrilled with the way he played. What a performer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and, you know, and Captain America had a final round. He had his victory lap on the singles. He did well there. The team of Spieth and Thomas did well. You know, you can't complain with them. But our superstars, our needle movers, are the people that they call the needle, just played like absolute crap.
Yeah.
Well, what about the captain's picks? Would you have changed that in hindsight now? And who would you have taken instead? Everybody's obviously pointing to Phil, saying first of all they didn't even play him very much. When he did play, he was bad. The fairways were so deep and so penal. Why have a guy who can't find a fairway? And Phil's obviously been having trouble finding fairways. Do you have any dispute with who Furyk picked for his four picks?
Not going in, I didn't. It did seem logical. I mean, Hank was talking about they weren't even really picks. I mean, they were just so obvious that anyone would have picked them. You know, very few people said, you know, no Phil, because he's not playing very well. But you know what? Phil is about the fans, and Phil is about everyone wants to see him. If it's not Tiger Woods, they're following Phil Mickelson, so why not take him? So, you know, it ended up he didn't play that much, which was probably the smart thing. But the times that he did play didn't do too well. And he didn't cry, though. No crying afterward, which was good.
Well, what
we're talking with Steve Johnson, managing partner with Hank Haney Golf. Go ahead, Frank.
Yeah, what do you make of Phil's performance yesterday at Silverado?
65, no bogeys, pretty darn good, huh?
Yeah, I mean, who woke up?
But Silverado has 36 holes out there. It's parallel fairways.
True.
Not a lot of rough. Now there are trees, but Phil does. Trees don't seem to bother Phil. He can curve it around them, or up over them, or under them. Good putting greens, ample putting, you know, surfaces. It's a course that he likes. And you know what? He's playing for himself. And he is still one of the best players. If there is any galleries out there, guys, they're following Phil Mickelson. They're not following Mark Mulder. They're not following anybody else that's out there. They're following Phil Mickelson.
True.
Yeah. Chase Wright or Sepp Straka are the two guys that are ahead of them after the first round. So, yeah, I don't think they're chasing after those guys very much. Sneds is decent players that are out there. You and I were out there a couple years ago, Steve, at Silverado. Really beautiful place.
Oh, yeah.
And you're right. It's a pretty forgiving, too, because you can get the ball left and right a little bit and still find your way to the green, much different than, obviously, what they're doing in Paris during the Ryder Cup. But I'm still curious – The after effects of the Ryder Cup, Steve, especially let's go to Reed and what he's saying. Is that a detriment to – would you pick him if you had a captain's pick and he didn't make it automatically as one of the top eight? Knowing what you know about Patrick Reed, no matter how he's playing, if you had a pick for Presidents or Ryder Cup, would you put him on your team?
No, I have a soft spot for Patrick Reed. I've known Patrick Reed ever since he was about 10 or 12 years old. Used to take lessons from one of our teachers, Peter Murphy. Come out all summer and spent all summer out in McKinney, Texas, lived with Peter and his family. He would work on his game, great attitude, hard worker. He was a little chubby back then as well, but I've got a soft spot for him. But you know what? I don't think he ever gets picked. The guys don't like him.
Why is that?
It's you got to admire the guy. He's one of those guys that thinks he's great. Now, he continues to improve, and heck, he's a 2017 or 2018 Masters champion.
Yeah.
I mean, he's an elite golfer. But just the little things he says, you know, for example, after Hazeltine, he talked about his back hurting because he was carrying Jordan around. At Bay Hill, early this year, he asked an official for a rule. Denied, and he said, if my name was Jordan Spieth, I would have gotten a drop there.
Yeah,
you just don't say things like that about one of the few guys tolerate you. and hope that there's no ramifications. I mean, there are, you know, and we're seeing it. We're seeing it play out right now.
Words have consequences. I'm guilty of that myself. I come across as flippant a lot of times, and I don't mean it that way. And Tim, you know, and Steve, I'll make a comment about to somebody or whatever, and it totally didn't mean it the way it came out. So I guess that's just a discipline that he needs to learn.
Yeah. And, well, you know, he's also support. Go ahead, Tim.
I was going to say there's also a family issue with Patrick, is there not?
Well, his whole support team is right there with him. I mean, they're as wheels off as he is.
Yeah.
With the comments. Right. I mean, when you got your mother-in-law, I mean, come on. Your mother-in-law? Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's like I said, if like his wife came out and defended him, it's kind of like if I got into a fight in elementary school and got beat up and my mother went to the school to defend me, I'd get beat up every day for the rest of my natural life.
Yeah, yeah, that's a little embarrassing. Very. I'd rather take an ass kicking.
Yep.
And get over it. Yeah. than to be known as the guy that his mom came out and beat up the other kid. You know, I mean, it's unfortunate. This year at the memorial, I was with my family, and we're on a hole where there's kind of a dead end in the gallery, you know, observing. It was hole number 12. Well, Patrick Reed's wife, Justine, and her father come up, and they pop underneath the net, and they walk right across the 14th fairway. And some people in the gallery said, "Who's that?" And I said, "Well, that's Patrick Reed's wife." And some guy says, "Wow, she looks like she owns this place." And you know what? I think she does.
Yeah, yeah, that entitlement attitude will get you absolutely nowhere, too, in life, period.
Yeah. So it's a bigger problem, and I think you're right. That's what we're talking about, whether Patrick Reed plays. If he qualifies, he qualifies. But then the second part of that problem is, who do you put him with? President's Cup or Ryder Cup or anything else? And he's young enough that we could be talking about this for another decade at least, right? That's an issue. Did Bubba, can we draw the comparison? Bubba certainly, Watson had issues and had people that didn't like him and made comments he should have made, blah, blah. And then they didn't pick him for Hazeltine, and he ate some humble pie, went there and said, "I'll help out any way I can as an assistant, whatever I can do." It seems like Bubba has at least tried to make amends and fix things. Certainly he was on this year's team. Can Patrick still make those changes? He's almost or right around 30 years old. Can a man still make those kind of changes? Do you think he will? Is it in his character to make any changes?
You know, he's going to play it off like it doesn't make any difference. But, you know, at the end of the day, everyone wants to be liked. No one wants to be hated. So, I mean, I hope he does. I hope he does. And a lot of that has to do with maturing as a person. And you know what? He's a smart guy. He's not stupid. He knows ultimately it's going to either cost him or get him money, his persona. I mean, the guy has won, what, 6 tournaments in his career?
I think so. Yep.
And he won the Masters this year, and he only elevated to 15th in the world. This guy's got some improving to do. We talked about it a lot, that, you know, he needs to continue to improve. His putting has gotten better, but his ball striking, especially at the Ryder Cup, was not good.
Yeah, it was a big problem. Steve Johnson with Hank Haney Golf is joining us. How about Tiger and the issues that he had and continues to have? Greatest golfer, some people say, of all time. Obviously one of the top two of all time. And yet, when it comes to these team competitions, what happens to Tiger?
Yeah, no, everyone thought that he may have been, I mean, he's tired, you know, he just won the week before, a lot of pressure on himself. Hank always says he never really did play all that great when he would go with this, I'm going to be quiet. I'm going to slow my cadence of my walking down. I'm going to look like I'm in a trance. And that's just to show you how serious I am about this and how much I want it and how much I'm going to be focusing. He never really tends to play his best when he does that. He's got to get off of that train.
Well, don't you think he was worn out, Steve? I mean, emotionally, mentally, as well as physically?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, he's got to be worn out. I mean, he's the guy that everyone wants to see, you know? And I heard a promo on SiriusXM not too long ago. Michael Breed was talking about, hey, you know what? All of these players love Tiger out there because that means it's less time that they have to spend in the press room. Tiger's always has the most press requests. They want to know what he has to say, even though he doesn't say that much in a press conference. He's the news.
Yeah.
So
he is.
Yeah.
You know, it's got to wear him out a little bit. But you know, in the same token, if he didn't like it, he wouldn't be there.
True. Let's go to the captain. Jim Furyk, great guy. We all like Jim a lot. Super person. Tay and Tabitha, great people. Give back a lot. Do a lot. Jim Furyk, was he the right man for the time? Did he make the right decisions? And, Steve, who do you think will be the next captain of the Ryder Cup for America?
Well, I mean, I think the next captain is going to be Steve Strickard. Now, is that the right choice? I don't know. I mean, these guys 1-0. He won the President's Cup. But, I mean, that doesn't seem to mean too much. I mean, I like Jim Furyk, too. I mean, he's an overachiever. He's the kind of guy that did it his way. And, I mean, everyone's pointing back to this afternoon round with Phil Mickelson and Bryson DeChambeau, an alternate shot. You know, Phil is a unique player. He can play his ball, but there's not many other people that can play his ball. And to put a partner in there with him, especially a rookie in an alternate shot where you're hitting, I mean, be honest, you're hitting about 18 shots and you're making about 18 to 20 putts, and that's it. I mean, that's a pretty tough position to put a guy like Bryson DeChambeau in. Now, you know what? I think he probably reveled in it. He probably thought, you know what? Hey, I'm going to make history here, and he did. They got their butts kicked.
Yeah, handed to him handily. So don't you think, though, Jim was trying to make a couple of super teams as opposed to, you know, by separating, mm-hmm. Bryson and Tiger?
Yeah, but like Dr. Phil says, how'd that work out for us?
How'd that work out for you?
Not too well. Not too well.
It was pretty bad.
The thing is, you know, let's compare the European team to the U.S. team. The European team, these guys, they talk about their camaraderie. The guys really get along with each other. They put their individual goals and all that aside in deference to the team. Their captain, Thomas Bjorn, is a very soft-spoken guy. He doesn't say a lot. Even Justin Rose said, hey, you know what? He let us do what we needed to do to prepare. We knew what we needed to do, and he let us do it. In the team room, they had that guy that does the imitations of all the players, and I guess one of his best imitations was a Brandel Chamblee, which they all enjoyed. So they're in their locker room. They're in their locker room, and they're loosening up. They're letting the significance of the event bring the pressure to them. There's no external pressures on them to do everything the right way. And hey, we're going to do this and that, and this is what the game plan is. They're loosening them up. The U.S. team has got Coach Krzyzewski in there. I mean, come on. I mean, we were done before we started.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They weren't loose. There was a lot of tension. And that tension, I don't know that it's going to go away. Steve, we appreciate your time. I know you're busy and you got to go back and clean some clubs and knock the dirt off some spikes and whatever the other seven jobs of a club pro.
How do I treat these mosquito bites, Tim? That's what I want.
I don't know. I'd go to the doctor immediately. Believe me, been there, done that.
I get some voodoo cream out, Steve, is what I'd use. That's good for everything.
I've got to tell you guys, seriously, I called my doctor yesterday. Now, Steve, let me ask you this real quick before you go about that voodoo cream.
Okay.
My right hand, I interlock, okay? Mm-hmm. So not my knuckle on my finger, but, you know, the joint all the way back on the hand itself right there is so sore and swollen and hurting so bad that I can barely shake hands with someone. I mean, it hurts to shake hands. It's killing me. I called my doctor yesterday and left a message to get me something. I need something for that. Is that what voodoo cream would do?
You know, we've had a lot of great testimonials about people that had arthritis and aches and pains. It's chronic aches and pains. It's not going to eliminate any type of surgery. But if you have a chronic ache and pain, which we all do, it really helps. It has 11 anti-inflammatories. It's a patented formula. There's not many pain creams that are patented formulas.
Yeah. I tried Blue Emu. It didn't work. I'll just be honest, it didn't work.
I mean, you know, sometimes they don't work, but it's what an inexpensive test balloon.
Yeah.
$20 something odd. And if you don't like it, you send it back. So, I mean, it's a no lose, and it can help. Hank was saying that there's orthopedic surgeons and rheumatologists are calling and ordering this stuff from Hank. Wow. So that's awesome.
Knowing Tim, he has some. He probably uses
absolutely.
It. He
had a bottle for you too, but I think he used it.
Yeah, probably. Well, he probably used it on the face of his driver and the face of his wedge, knowing Tim.
Was that not the point of the whole thing? That kind of
take the pain out of the yips.
I think that's why I got it. I put it between my ears. Hey, Steve, by the way, hockey season's here. Have you got your Stars Stanley Cup tickets yet? I went
Predators.
To the opening game last night.
Predators.
Stars won 3-0.
I saw that. I think with all the – I saw the picture that you sent, and,
yeah.
You know, it looks like they're calling for Mike Modano again. I talked to our good buddy Ken Hitchcock, who retired from the Dallas Stars this last year.
Right.
And, you know, they're watching – they've got some problems on the back end, as usual. One of their big defensemen had a bad concussion at the end of last year. He hasn't recovered yet. That defensive crew is a big ask for any team. They play a lot of minutes. When you get to the end of the year, and we're a long way from the end of the year, but you get to the end of the year, Tim, you know, it's all about defense and your goalie and your defenseman. And when you're winning playoff games 1-0, it's not like you need a lot of scoring. You need a lot of bravery, and you need a lot of great defense. And so I think that's an area that the Dallas Stars are looking at. Now, I was watching a lot of Eastern Conference games last night, Tim.
You were.
They're looking good. I mean, again, they had another game of the, I guess that's all they play is the Pittsburgh Penguins play the Washington Capitals every game because they've played them. twice.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of scoring out there, too. Your Chicago Blackhawks were scoring a lot last night. I've never seen a team of so many small guys, and small and fast. So
as
I look
the
forward
Blackhawks?
To talking hockey with you.
And
the Blackhawks have a lot of small, fast guys.
Yep.
And mean.
Yep.
Yeah.
Patrick Kane, but, all those guys. Yeah, they're all kind of the same
we'll,
build.
We'll see you boys later in the season. My Predators are going to do well.
We'll see. We got to get Earl Forsey on because he'll talk about the Capitals, you know.
Yeah. He'll be skating the cup
got
around.
A winner.
Earl will.
He will. Yeah, Earl. Yeah. Earl will bring that up because he won't say anything about the Redskins or the Nationals.
Are the fact that Barry had his salary doubled after he left. So,
Mr. Enthusiasm, Earl Forsey. All right, well, Steve, we'll let you go. We appreciate your time.
Thanks, Steve.
And thanks for the insight, as always. We'll talk to you again soon, okay?
Hey, thanks, guys.
Thanks, buddy.
There he
See
goes.
Ya.
Steve Johnson with Hank Haney Golf. Go get some voodoo cream. He did not give me an extra bottle, by the way, Frank. He's just yanking on you there a little bit.
You know what? You're going to be called
it comes
before
in two different
Senate
kinds.
Committee.
I mean, there's a red tube and a blue tube. Not sure exactly. I think one just has menthol in it. The other one doesn't or something. But, check it out.
I'm going to. I'm going
to
get some heavy
and
RX
I have used
today
it.
Or a shot or something. I can't.
Yeah,
it's killing me.
Yeah. I know. As everybody gets older, it just you kind of everything starts to get sore, doesn't it?
It
used
does.
To go away when you were younger. It just you'd get sore and it'd go away the next day. Now it's it doesn't go away. And matter of fact, it spreads. And suddenly your wrist hurts and now your elbow hurts. You're like, what happened there?
You want to take
a break,
or you want to just call Bob live? He's waiting on us.
I don't. Well, go ahead and call.
Let's just dial Dr. Bob Winter's phone number and see if he answers. This ought to be fun. Hey, do you need new siding?
Well, I'm pretty sure.
Good morning, Dr. Bob Winters.
Dr. Bob Winters, you are live on the air right now, so no bad jokes, okay?
All right, hey, Frank, how you doing? Nice.
Hey, buddy. Tim's here with us, Tim Matthews. We're
doing
the show
Dr.
live,
Bob?
And sorry we're late.
Hey, no worries. I tell you what, you have arrived. There's no two-stroke penalty for a five-minute delay, so no worries.
Good.
So, great to be on.
So we had Steve Johnson from Hank Haney Golf on this morning, and I know you're down at the David Ledbetter Academy there in Orlando at Reunion Resort. Is it Reunion?
Champions Gate. Reunion's just right down the road.
Right.
Another great resort.
Yeah. So Tim asked if he could come out and hit balls and work a little bit today in Dallas there at the Hank Haney Golf Ranch. So if I fly to Orlando, can I come out and work with you guys?
Absolutely.
There you go,
and
Tim.
You come down here, Frank. We've got two couches. no waiting for you. For your mental game.
Come right in.
What mental game? There is no mental game with me.
Get him right in. He needs it.
God. Dr. Bob, thank you for joining us so much today. I know we had you last week before the Ryder Cup. What happened?
Well, I think it
simple
happened.
Simple question. What happened?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, same stuff, different day. I mean, this has been going on now for almost two decades. I mean, think about it. Since 1985, when, you know, we started to really sort of kind of see this erosion of American dominance, the Europeans have actually done it better. So the Europeans have been the studs. And the Americans have been the duds, and I'm not I'm not downgrading any of our players because we have some unbelievable, talented players. But here's the issue, you know, I've always had a problem with, is that, you know, a lot of people think that you can take a group of unbelievably talented people, athletes, whatever, and put them together and make an all-star team. Now, you may have a collection of all-stars, but that does not make a what we call an orchestrated team, a team, you know, an all-star team. So we have a real problem with cohesion, team chemistry, and the Europe seem to really always get it together. And when I look at the word teammate, that's sort of really what Great Britain and Ireland in the old days, and now we bring the rest of the European theater into the Ryder Cup. These people are on the team, but they're also mates. It's sort of like you go into England, you say, hey, yeah, he's my friend, he's my mate. These are teammates. These are people who have grown up, played golf with each other, have traveled all around the world and all around the European continent, playing on the, you know, the county matches, the national matches. And they've kind of grown up with this idea of the Ryder Cup is something sacrosanct. It is something so revered. It is such an honor, an opportunity to be on that team. So when they get a chance to be on the team, it is first and foremost about the European team. We just haven't got that right here in America yet. And I don't care how you want to orchestrate it. You just can't put ping pong tables and video games into a room and say, hey, guys, you know, play friendly like we're in kindergarten. And let's all, you know, play together nicely, because there's just way too many egos and too many people want to actually proclaim their voice to be the dominant alpha male here, and they actually supersede the captain or any other type of leadership, and it just really creates a lot of chaos. The Americans haven't gotten this right for a long time, and that's what's happened.
We're talking with Dr. Bob Winters from the David Ledbetter Academy down in Orlando, Florida, and Dr. Bob's been a good friend of ours for a long time. You wrote in your blog, the Golf Insider blog, and I quote, the USA team needs to remove the baggage. The USA needs to let go of the hype, the overestimation of their world rankings, predictions, popularity, task force, input, pods, and most of all, their self-inflated and commercialized egos, end quote. That's a heavy statement, Dr. Bob.
Well, it is a heavy statement, because here's what the Europeans do, and everybody's looking for answers, all right? You know, I'm just giving you a professional perspective, is that I've always said we really don't need these task force. We don't need more personality tests. We don't need more motivational speakers. What we need, you know, are 12 players under the leadership of a great captain. And I think we've had some great captains in the past. I think, you know, we've had some, you know, that made, you know, a few sort of erratic choices. But hey, that's really what a captain does. But, you know, what the Europeans have done, and I say this in this article, the secret sauce that the Europeans have that the USA team is lacking, is that if a player is on the European team and the captain says, hey, I want you to play with this person, whoever it is, whether they get along, whether their games are compatible or not, that person says, right on, I'm right there. Let's go out and be great for each other. Let's be great for the team, and let's play to the very best of our ability. And it still comes down to, Frank and Tim, it still comes down to your ability to execute and play golf. We need to KISS, and that doesn't mean keep it simple, stupid. We need to keep it simple and specific. In the bottom line, the Europeans have actually beat us. They beat us playing the game of golf. And I think what's happened, we overestimate our abilities. We talk about this is the greatest team we've ever had. The Europeans are underdogs. And I said this about a month and a half, 2 months ago, before even the teams were all totaled out. I said, listen, the Europeans, from what I'm seeing, from top to bottom, they are every bit as strong, if not as strong, as our USA team. It may not be on the OWGR, the official World Golf Ranking ratings, but as far as playing and playing the game, they can match up with everyone. So they come in with sort of this kind of little chip on their shoulder, and they put the onus of responsibility on the USA team to say, all right, you know, if you're so good, then let's go play. You know, put your money where your hype is, or let's go play. And what we all know is that hype, media publicity, and a reputation never beat anybody when it was time to perform. The Europeans have simply outplayed us, outperformed us, and out-teamed us. That's about as simple as it gets.
Hey, Tim, I have a question for you, and then I want Dr. Bob to respond to this. Okay, I can relate because of my background in the music world. You can't, and for people who don't understand, in an orchestra, there is a first chair player. There's a concert master. There's a conductor. That conductor, you know, you can't have four first chairs in the trumpet section in an orchestra, or four concert mistresses or masters, which is the first violin, because they don't work well together. You've got all type A personalities, all players who think they're the best in the world. I was guilty of that. Somebody's got to play second chair, third chair, fourth chair, which means the conductor makes the decision who's going to do that, i.e. the captain. I relate it to music. There's not a democracy in an orchestra. There's not a democracy on the New England Patriots football team. That's just a statement. I just love your guys' reaction to that.
Well, I'll say this. I think that true, you've got to put a team together that can play as a team. You're right. You pick out good teams. You've got Tom Brady, and then you've got a lot of times a bunch of guys on the team that you don't even share their names from week to week, and yet they win Super Bowls. And so it's a blend of the right guys. Find the right mix to put in that locker room, to put on the field, that'll all play their roles and do what they can do. At the same time, Golden State Warriors are filled with superstars and type A people, and yet they continue to win as well, which normally that wouldn't seem to work when you've got four or five all-stars on one team. And in Kevin Durant and in Steph Curry, two of the best in the league, two of probably top three or four guys in the league. How do they do? They seem to be able to do that, and I think Steve Kerr, the coach, maybe deserves credit for that. So I'm curious about, you know, how that blend works, because you can do it in different ways and still get success out of it. And what you're talking about, Dr. Bob, with the team of Europeans versus the team of Americans, why we kind of just assume the Americans have all these big egos, and why are the Europeans, why don't they have egos? Do they grow up in a different environment over there? Is it they're not as pampered, they're not as spoiled, there's not as much money? Because it seems like it's a given that we have a bunch of egotistical prima donnas on the U.S. Why don't they have them over in Europe, too? They're very successful in winning majors as well. Why is it so different?
Dr. Bob, before you answer, I want to throw one more thing in. In your blog article that you wrote, which is fabulous, by the way, and we'll tell everybody how to go find it, you took Europe and broke it down letter by letter. And under R, the third letter in the word Europe, you say the R represents respect and responsibility. It appears quite evident in the past few years that whenever the captain of the European squad has suggested, whatever, I should say, the captain of the European squad has suggested, his players have responded with resounding full participation, end quote. Great statement.
Well, you know, here's the thing. I'm going to keep this. I'm going to even break this down to sort of where every listener can understand this. When you're playing in an A, B, C, D scramble format, you know, whether men or women, you know, scramble format. Isn't it ironic that when your top A player plays great and really is carrying the team, when they all go into the 19th hole to celebrate, what does the team say? Wow, we played great. It was a great team effort. Everybody contributed. But that may not really be the case. It may have just been one person carrying the team if it was what we call the paradise rules, where the A player could hit all the shots. But if the A player plays really well, one of your top players plays really well, and the team doesn't play well, what is, you know, the discussion at, you know, the 19th hole? He didn't do anything. He was just terrible. And I think that's the problem and issue that we have here in America. We really hate to lose, and we really don't like to lose at all. And it isn't just about good sportsmanship and about the participation and about, you know, creating an unbelievable event. It has become, you know, the final analysis. We have to win at all costs. And one of the things, you know, I've always hated about the Olympics was because we weren't getting enough USA gold medal count. We had to take all of our athletes and then bring in the professional athletes. And that's where we created, you know, the Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, Kevin McHale dream team. And we finally won the USA gold basketball medal back. And so it was, you know, things that have really alluded to really where we are now. In America, we have superstar athletes who are making millions and millions who, if they don't like the coach's decision, they are sort of becoming very vocal. You know, they don't want to play. So who's really coaching the team? So we're sort of, you know, letting this model infiltrate, you know, this team nature of golf, you know, and golf is by itself a very individual game. And I have been a college coach. I continually work with, you know, numbers and numbers of college programs. And I got to tell you, as a coach, as a team captain, it's really, really tough to get all of these different personalities, all these different egos, and get them all working and orchestrated to great, you know, create a great effect. So what we really have to do is really we have to examine really where we are. For me, I don't think we really need a task force. What I'm looking for is I want 12 players that will play for a captain that will give it their all, win, lose, or draw. But I want them to go out and play with a lot of passion, a lot of heart. That's what I see in the Europeans. I tell you what I really liked about this Ryder Cup. All right. And I'm an equal opportunity sports psychologist. I just love to see great performance. What I saw in the European side, I saw them just loving and having joy. It was joy out there. They were enjoying the whole process. I mean, the first tee, playing the game, you know, winning, losing, you know, their matches, whatever they were doing, there was joy. When I looked at our American squad, they looked very solemn. It looked very forlorn. They just looked like they were out of their comfort zone. They didn't really look like they were inspired. And I've always loved this, you know, saying, you know, just give me an opportunity. You know, it isn't an obligation to play on the team. It's an opportunity to really play, to play with my teammates, to play for my captain, to play, you know, for my flag. That's really what Thomas Bjorn did. Give him an A+ for really sort of, you know, making some great captain's picks and really picking people that have great passion. You know, and Henrik Stenson, and Sergio Garcia and Ian Poulter. I mean, these guys came through. His wild card picks, his captain's picks came through while Coach Furyk went out, you know, with a sputter. So I'll tell you what, I love the Ryder Cup. I love all the hype. I think really the very best night for the Americans was when they all, you know, went to the Palace of Versailles and everybody was all dressed up. I think that's really where we had the most fun, okay? Because all I saw were a lot of American players taking a lot of pictures of, you know, these beautiful people there at the Palace of Versailles. But when it was time to tee it up, the USA team just wasn't ready to play. And they weren't prepared to play, Frank and Tim. That's the first thing I'm going to say, is that we did not take enough time to go over and really get ourselves acclimated and comfortable with Le Golf National. There was only one player, I believe, maybe two, on our United States squad that took the time to go over beforehand. And Thomas Bjorn, yeah, again, I think didn't really adapt that golf course. He didn't really change it that much. Why? Because he had Alex Noren, Tommy Fleetwood, and Francesco. These guys had had a lot of success there before. So he didn't want to alter it and have them looking at the Ryder Cup, you know, venue as different than what it had been for the French Open or many years before. So, again, it isn't just the will to win. I think Vince Lombardi and Bobby Knight both said that. The will to win, everybody has that. The difference is the will to prepare to win. That is the critical difference, and that's what we did not have. We weren't prepared. We weren't ready to play.
Lack of
and, Frank,
discipline.
It was like you and I were talking about this last week, and that's what I exactly saw in Tiger. Remember we were talking about this? I said, Tiger looks depressed the whole time. There's no enthusiasm. He mopes, quite honestly, when things aren't going well. He's the exact opposite of what Dr. Bob was just talking about, which is bringing up your teammates, getting some enthusiasm, patting guys in the back, and let's get it going. Let's go. Every American seemed to be in their own world of misery. And if they made a birdie putt, yeah, they'd fist bump and all that. The only guys you really saw a lot of that was Justin and Jordan Spieth, because they've been buddies for the last 10 years. So they know each other and they're friends. You'd see them kind of, but otherwise, it was almost like the hole would be over and they'd go their separate ways to get to the next tee box.
Yeah.
You know, there wasn't a lot of friendship.
Justin
or
Thomas prepared, though. Straight he feeling. Played. He went over and played in the French Open.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I'm going to give, you know, credit to Jim Furyk. Listen, being the captain of the USA squad now is becoming sort of a – it's a double-edged sword. When you win, oh,
like
you're put
president.
Up on a pedestal. But if you lose, you know, you're kicked, you know, in the teeth. And I still think, you know, when we talk about really what we need to do, we need, you know, from 2014, what happened at Glen Eagles, we need to learn that lesson. Because that karma is going to come back, and it's going to affect, you know, those people that actually sort of threw people under the bus. And I'm not going to mention any names. Everybody knows who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's kind of funny how karma, you know, always comes around in this game. And it is so true. But to give, you know, credit to Tiger, Tiger was on such an incredible high. He was so emotional, and I'm not sitting here going to, you know, make excuses for Tiger. You know, Tiger has not had, you know, the most sparkling Ryder Cup record, you know, by far. Neither has Phil Mickelson. Both of them have had very lackluster Ryder Cup careers. What I would really love to say is that, hey, if we could have had young players, different players, players that, you know, just really want to be in there and be gutsy, people like Kevin Kisner, Xander Schauffele, people like that, it could have been totally different. But then again, you know, we're armchair quarterbacking here. I'm just saying we need to keep things simple. I've always been, Frank and Tim, of the opinion, why do we need so many vice captains? My goodness gracious, we're like we're platooning a football team over there instead of a golf team. All right, I mean, we've got, you know, cards and girlfriends and wives and
You brought up Tim's pet peeve, Tim.
I totally agree. There's way too much that you don't have to. I don't disagree with about the captains or the vice captains, but the wives' girlfriends, I think, have no business being around the event. They're fine that they're there, but I mean they should not be in a cart behind the group while they're playing. They shouldn't be talking to them on the practice range. None of that. You don't see it in any other sport. There's a reason you don't see it. There's a reason. I'm not being careful. It's the way it is. It's my opinion.
God.
You don't see it in any other sports.
And Tim, let me say this, you know, for me, you know, listen, I think, you know, it's part of the whole glamour, it's part of the whole hype, it's part of the whole experience, but I'm just suggesting, going forward, my goodness, we need a captain, and then we need one assistant captain. I remember seeing, I think at Valderrama many years ago, Coach, you know, Seve, going around with walkie-talkie, he was here. There. He was everywhere. I don't know how many people that Seve might have mowed down in that cart going from one golf hole to another. But he did the job that a captain should be doing. But you don't need 5, 6, 7 assistant captains out there. It's like almost everybody's got their own little coach, own little trainer, own little entourage. And listen, let's get back to the basics. And in the final analysis, guys, it is, we need to go out. And what's the one fundamental that you have to do? What's the one fundamental that brings success in golf? You just have to be ready to perform, and you've got to be ready to execute. And in show business, Frank, you know this. Whatever happens on the sidelines, when you enter the ropes, when you enter the arena, when you sit down in that concert seat, the show must go on. All right. The show has to go on. You've got to be able to execute. And we haven't done that. And all I hear is a lot, you know, of mealy mouth excuses and whining and trying to throw people under the bus. And, you know, he said, she said, and it's a lot of turmoil that needs to be cleaned up. But first of all, it needs to be cleaned up with our philosophy. Hey, listen, we may not be as good as we think we are. And that's where the onus of responsibility is. You either put up or you shut up. And if you can't play better, then you actually just You just have to sit down. And that's pretty hard, you know, a core coming from me, because I tend to be a very positive, optimistic, very negotiate type things. But, you know, really, hey, listen, golf's black and white. The ball either goes in the hole or it stays out. And that's the end of the story. But you've got to feel good about the effort that you put forward. I'm not sure, you know, in the hearts of every player to say, did I give my absolute, unbelievable, undeniable best? That's really what I'm looking for in a player. So when instead of having all the personality tests, all the pods, all the different task force, probably what we need most of all, we need to have a cardiologist and a gastroenterologist, all right, to check the heartbeat and check the intestinal fortitude.
I knew it was coming.
of some of our players. And I got to tell you, this is coming from me as a player, as a coach, and as a sports psychologist. I mean, it just, hey, when push comes to shove, I mean, what we always say, it's not the size of the dog, it's the size of the heart and the fight in the dog, you know, that really shows up. So that's really what I'm looking for. Let's get back to basics. Let's get back to playing great golf. And let's get back to having some fun out there.
What more could you say?
Well, you can say this. Secretariat was a small horse with a huge heart.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Massive heart. Massive
heart. I've got to tell you, I've got to relate this to music, and this is kind of tongue-in-cheek, but as I was watching it in Paris toward the end and saw the carnage that was occurring, it brought back a great composer, Berlioz, who wrote Symphony Fantastique that I performed 100 times over the years in orchestras. One of the pieces, a movement in that, is called March to the Scaffold, and it is in the brain of the man. It's his mind. What's his mind's going through as he's marching to the scaffold and sees it and he knows his head's about to be cut off? That was kind of like Sunday at the Ryder Cup. It was a march to the scaffold.
It got close
for a little bit, but then eventually what happened, we all knew it was going to happen.
Here's one thing that, you know, I want to really say here, just why I've got a little bit of airtime with you guys. Dennis Connors, you know, used to be the skipper of the America's Cup. Yeah. And he said something. I thought it was fantastic. He said, you can never outperform your self-image. And I thought that was really great, because when Thomas Bjorn you know, picks Ian Poulter and picks Sergio Garcia, regardless of really what their current form or year-to-date form was, what is their self-image? These two players, specifically these two, their self-image is wrapped up in, I am clutch, I am a Ryder Cup champion, I can bring it home, I can deliver, I'm the paper boy, I'm the postman, I can deliver. And you can never outperform your self-image. So when they go out, and that's really what Europe now has, their self-image is not the underdog. Their self-image was actually created in 1983 at PGA National, right at the home of PGA of America, when Seve Ballesteros came into that locker room after Lanny Watkins won the final match, and he actually secured victory from the jaws of defeat for the Americans here on American soil. Seve comes in. He's looking at all the different players, all of the Fabulous Five, and he was one of them. He says, why do you have your heads down? He goes, why are you so disappointed? He goes, we now have proven that we can play with the USA. We can actually play with them. We can beat them. He says, let's use this day to proclaim that we're not going to be underdogs anymore. That was the seed of greatness. And that next, you know, Ryder Cup at the Belfry, you know, the European team wins. And then here in 1987, I remember being there. Rocky, you know, the movie, you know, The Eye of the Tiger. I remember, you know, talking to Tony Jacklin. I remember talking to Bernhard. I remember talking to Sam Torrance. They had that Eye of the Tiger, and they beat the American squad on Jack's turf there at Muirfield Village. I remember being there and seeing that was the resurgence now of this whole ideal, this dream. So championships just aren't won on the day of competition, but they're won days, weeks, months, and even years ahead with championship thinking, championship preparation. So that self-image that the Europeans have right now, it isn't one of the underdogs. No matter how, you know, our American media wants to spin it or hype it, the Europeans, they really believe that's their cup. They're going to savor it. They're going to love it. They're going to enjoy it. And I'll tell you what, when they come back over here, you know, to America, I guarantee you, they won't want to give it up. We've got to earn it, and we've got to win it back. So we got to get back to basics.
All right. All right. Well said. We couldn't have asked for a more intellectual person to kind of break it down for us and explain, I think, for a lot of us to understand what's happening and how it has to change and what has to change for the next Ryder Cup. Dr. Bob, thanks as always for your time. We do appreciate it. You add an awful lot of brain power to this show. Not to say Frank and I don't, but you brought up a few notches, right. And we appreciate it.
thanks, guys. And by the way, yeah. Tim, you know, for me, I like to see the girlfriends and the wives. I think it might be one of the prettier parts of the whole Ryder Cup experience, okay?
I agree. So
it's a pretty part.
But I really will have to say this, you know, when they did all the teams and all the, you know, support cast, all, you know, the spouses on, you know, the steps of Versailles, I got to tell you, I mean, beautiful. To be a player, I mean, I wasn't there. I could have had a chance to be there, but I wasn't there this year. But to see that, what an experience. And isn't it great that the game of golf affords so many people this opportunity to experience these great, great things. So whatever you take, you know, from this Ryder Cup, I get excited. You know, we talk about this, you know, days, weeks, months, even years before the next Ryder Cup. We'll talk here for the next 2 years about, you know, what we need to do. We'll look forward to the next one. But I got to tell you, I said, this is a great game, and I'm so glad I get a chance, you know, to work with you guys and work with the great players, talking about how they can get their minds and their attitudes in the right place. So appreciate it, guys. You know, love being on the show this morning.
Thanks, Dr. Bob.
All right.
Thank you, Dr. Bob. We appreciate it.
We appreciate it.
You too. Sports psychologist obviously knows his stuff.
Yeah.
And what's going on?
Dr. Bob Winters, plural.com. I would implore our listeners to go check out this piece that he wrote, Dr. Bob Winter's Golf Insider blog. It's called The European Secret Sauce. And it is really, Tim, you've read it, I've read it. It's a great article.
Yeah.
It breaks
very cool.
It down.
Very nice. Yeah.
Versailles is a gorgeous place. He's absolutely right. Have you been there, Tim? Have you been over to?
Nope. Never happened to Versailles.
We performed a concert there when I was in college on the Champs-Élysées. And they took us through Versailles, just much like they took the team. They took the orchestra through. And we were all dressed up, very respectful, and I still have the pictures of that. It's an incredible place. And it was Fashion Week last week. Come on, Tim. It was Fashion Week.
Just to be clear, I don't know how I could be any clearer. I don't have any problem. I'm not saying the wives and girlfriends shouldn't travel over there, shouldn't be part of the entourage to go there. I'm just saying during the competition, no. No, they don't. But I don't, you know, I see that every week on the PGA Tour. It's just different. I get it that a wife jumps out on the green after her husband makes a winning putt. It's just, it's kind of a different world. But I'm just saying in that whole thing, I think there's almost like you got to isolate them just like you do when you go to a Super Bowl. The wives are over here at the hotel. The players are getting ready for the game.
I get it. No distractions.
There's got to be a place for them.
We've got a purpose.
I think it is a distraction.
We've got a job to do. No distractions. And I don't care what you say.
It becomes too much of a social thing.
Yeah,
you know?
I see what you're saying. I mean, you're not being socially incorrect.
I'm not ripping on the women.
Yeah,
I think they're great. The wives be a part of it. I just think that seeing them in the background when they're on the carts and right behind the green is not necessarily. I don't think the place.
But if you did, it would certainly boost our listenership.
<that's>
for a day.
All
then
right.
It would be over.
All right.
Then it would be over. Hey, it's the weekend, and for our listeners, this is it. We're not talking about the Ryder Cup anymore. We're going to talk about Silverado. We're going to talk about the tournament. Our own Brant Snedeker here from Nashville is up on the top of the leaderboard. Phil Mickelson is at the top of the leaderboard.
Yeah.
The Silverado Resort's a gorgeous place. Quick side note to that. A lot of wine in Napa, but just to bring you the latest news, it came out this morning that birds in Minnesota are flying into cars, into buildings, and into windows, because they're eating fermented grapes. Just saying.
Really?
And Ainsley Earhart on Fox News said, it's cheaper than vodka. So there you go. Just a public service announcement that fermented berries are cheaper than vodka. So
Not in Napa. They're doing it in Minnesota.
They're doing it in Minnesota. Interesting. But in Napa, they're drinking a lot of nice wine, I'm sure. There's some good stuff
out
there.
I'm sure they are.
It's going to be a great tournament. All right. So anyway, I'll let you
go. We'll talk about it. We'll talk about what happens. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how everybody fares in the Napa Valley. But and also some of the Ryder Cup guys, Tony Finau and who else? Brooks Koepka stayed over in Europe and are playing in a tournament over in Europe. Guys are, you know, it's a world game. They're all over the world doing their things. Matter of fact, Jordan Spieth stayed in Europe because he traveled to Bosnia and a few different countries to see his brother. He has an older brother who's a European professional basketball player and watched his brother play some basketball while he was over there. So, yeah, not all lost. You know, everything gets healed. We'll be back at it for President's Cup, and we'll see what happens there. It fuels the fire, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Right. So we're in the 2018-2019 PGA Tour wraparound season. Here we go. This is the first week. Everybody's at zero in FedEx Cup points right now. Everybody's at zero. So here we go. It's going to be a great season, a great year. A lot of stuff going on for us in Golf Talk America. And Tim and I traveling around to the Masters and on and on and on. The Players' Championship, the Masters. We're going to be on the road a lot this year. It's going to be fun. And special thanks to all of our sponsors, Club Corp for one, the French Lick Resort for another, and some new ones that we'll be talking about soon. Just didn't get a chance this week because Ryder Cup took so much of our bandwidth this week that we didn't want to bring on a brand new sponsor in the middle of all that. So, but next week we'll do it.
All right, we're out of time. We're done. We're finished. Give me some music, Frank.
We're toast.
Where is it?
We're toast.
Play it. We're everything.
March to the scaffold.
Hey, thanks so much to Steve Johnson with Hank Haney Golf for being with us. Steve Johnson did a phenomenal job. We do appreciate it. Also, thanks to Dr. Bob Winters, sports psychologist. And all of you for listening. We do appreciate it. For Frank Bassett, I'm Tim Matthews. Please remember to join us next time right here on Golf Talk America. Have a great day.